We're continuing Chapter 8 of Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets. So he just got out scot-free from Filch's office because he took a sneak peek at that letter that Filch was applying to some, like, learn magic. Well, of course he's healthy, but, you know, it's on the internet, it's for you. Harry, did it work? Nearly headless Nick came gliding out of a classroom. Behind him, Harry could see the wreckage of a large black and gold cabinet that appeared to have been dropped from a great height. I persuaded Peeves to crash it right over Filch's office, said Nick eagerly. Thought it might distract him. Was that you? Said Harry gratefully.
Yeah, it worked.
I didn't even get detention. Thanks, Nick. They set off up the corridor together. Nearly headless Nick, Harry noticed, was still holding Sir Patrick's rejection letter. I wish there was something I could do for you about the headless hunt, Harry said. Nearly headless Nick stopped in his tracks, and Harry walked right through him. He wished he hadn't. It was like stepping through an icy shower. But there is something you could do for me, said Nick excitedly. Harry, would I be asking too much? But no, you wouldn't want. What is it? Said Harry. Well, this Halloween will be my 500th death day, said Nearly Headless Nick, drawing himself up and looking dignified. Oh, said Harry, not sure whether he should look sorry or happy about this. Right. I'm holding a party down in one of the roomier dungeons. Friends will be coming from all over the country. It would be such an honor if you would attend. Mr. Weasley and Miss Granger would be most welcome, too, of course. But I dare say you'd rather go to the school feast. He watched Harry on tenterhooks. No, said Harry quickly. I'll come. My dear boy, Harry Potter at my death day party, and... He hesitated, looking excited. Do you think you could possibly mention to Sir Patrick how very frightening and impressive you find me? Of course, said Harry. Nearly headless Nick beamed at him. A death day party? Said Hermione keenly when Harry had changed at last and joined her and Ron in the common room. I bet there aren't too many living people who can say they've been to one of those. It'll be fascinating. Why would anyone want to celebrate the day they died? Said Ron, who was halfway through his potions, homework, and grumpy. Sounds dead depressing to me. Rain was still lashing through the windows, which were now inky black, but inside all looked bright and cheerful. The firelight glowed all over the countless squashy armchairs when people sat reading, talking, or doing homework, or in the case of Fred and George Weasley, trying to find out what would happen if you fed a filibuster firework to a salamander. Fred had, quote, rescued the brilliant orange fire-dwelling lizard from a Care of Magical Creatures class, and it was now smoldering gently on the table, surrounded by a knot of curious people. Harry was at the point of telling Ron and Hermione about Filch and the quick spell course, when the salamander suddenly whizzed in the air, emitting loud sparks and bangs as it whirled wildly around the room. That seems like cruelty to animals. This kind of goes along with, I don't know. Anyways. Like, you know how, like, future serial killers will torture little helpless animals.
Don't say things like that. Let's keep reading.
I'm worried about this poor salamander. The sight of Percy bellowing himself hoarse at Fred and George, the spectacular display of tangerine stars showering from the salamander's mouth, and its escape into the fire with accompanying explosions drove both Filch and the quickspell envelope from Harry's mind. So I guess the salamander was okay. By the time Halloween arrived, Harry was regretting his rash promise to go to the death day party. The rest of the school was happily anticipating their Halloween feast. The great hall had been decorated with the usual live bats. Hagrid's vast pumpkins had been carved into lanterns large enough for three men to sit inside. And there were rumors that Dumbledore had booked a troop of dancing skeletons for entertainment. A promise is a promise, Hermione reminded Harry bossily. You said you'd go to the death day party. So, at 7 o'clock, Harry, Ron, and Hermione walked straight past the doorway to the great, packed great hall, which was glittering invitingly with gold plates and candles, and directed their steps instead toward the dungeons. The passageway leading to nearly headless Nick's party had been lined with candles too, though the effect was far from cheerful. These were long, thin, jet-black tapers, all burning bright, casting a dim, ghostly light even over their own living faces. The temperature dropped with every step they took. As Harry shivered and drew his robes tightly around him, he heard what sounded like a thousand fingernails scraping an enormous blackboard. "Is that supposed to be music?" whispered Ron. They turned a corner and saw Nearly Headless Nick standing at a doorway hung with black velvet drapes. "My dear friends," he said mournfully, "welcome, welcome, so pleased you could come." He swept off his plumed hat and bowed them inside. It was an incredible sight. The dungeon was full of hundreds of pearly white, translucent people, mostly drifting around a crowded dance floor, waltzing to the dread, quavering sound of 30 musical saws played by an orchestra on a raised, black-draped platform. A chandelier overhead blazed midnight blue with a thousand more black candles. Their breath rose in a mist before them. It was like stepping into a freezer. "Shall we have a look around?" Harry suggested, wanting to warm up his feet. "Careful not to walk through anyone," said Ron nervously, and they set off around the edge of the dance floor. They passed a group of gloomy nuns, a ragged man wearing chains, and the fat friar, a cheerful Hufflepuff ghost, who was talking to a knight with an arrow sticking out of his forehead. Harry wasn't surprised that the Bloody Baron, a gaunt, staring, slithering ghost covered in silver bloodstains, was being given wide berth by the other ghosts. "Oh, no," said Hermione, stopping abruptly. "Turn back, turn back. I don't want to talk to Moaning Myrtle." "Who?" said Harry, as they backtracked quickly. "She haunts one of the toilets in the girls' bathroom on the first floor," said Hermione. "She haunts a toilet?" "Yes. It's been out of order all year, because she keeps having tantrums and flooding the place. And everyone in there anyway, if I could avoid it. It's awful trying to pee with her wailing at you." "Look, food," said Ron. On the other side of the dungeon was a long table, also covered in black velvet. They approached it eagerly, but the next moment had stopped in their tracks, horrified. The smell was quite disgusting. Large, rotten fish were laid on handsome silver platters. Cakes, burned charcoal black, were heaped on salvers, and there was a great maggoty haggis, a slab of cheese covered in furry green mold, and, in pride of place, an enormous gray cake in the shape of a tombstone, with tar-like icing forming the words, "Sir Nicholas de Mimsey Porpington, died 31st of October, 1492. Harry watched, amazed, as a portly ghost approached the table, crouched low, and walked through it, his mouth held wide so that it passed through one of the stinking salmon. "Can you taste it if you walk through it?" Harry asked him. "Almost," said the ghost sadly, and he drifted away. "I expect they've let it rot to give it a stronger flavor," said Hermione knowledgeably, pinching her nose and leaning closer to look at the putrid haggis. "Can we move? I feel sick," said Ron. They barely turned around, however, when a little man swooped suddenly from under the table and came to a halt in midair before them. "Hello, Peeves," said Harry cautiously. Unlike the ghosts around them, Peeves the poltergeist was the very reverse of pale and transparent. He was wearing a bright orange party hat, a revolving bow tie, and a broad grin on his wicked face. "Nibbles," he said sweetly, offering them a bowl of peanuts covered in fungus. "No thanks," said Hermione. "Heard you talking about poor Myrtle," said Peeves, his eyes dancing. "Rude you was about poor Myrtle." He took a deep breath and bellowed. "Oh, Myrtle! Oh no, Peeves, don't tell her what I said. She'll be really upset," Hermione whispered frantically. "I didn't mean it. I don't mind her. Oh, hello, Myrtle." The squat ghost of a girl had glided over. She had the glummest face Harry had ever seen, half hidden behind lank hair and thick, pearly spectacles. "What?" she said sulkily. "How are you, Myrtle?" said Hermione in a falsely bright voice. "It's very nice to see you out of the toilet." Myrtle sniffed. "Miss Granger was just talking about you," said Peeves slyly in Myrtle's ear. "Just just saying how nice you look tonight, said Hermione, glaring at Peeves. Myrtle eyed Hermione suspiciously. You're making fun of me, she said, silver tears welling rapidly in her small, see-through eyes. No, honestly, didn't I just say how nice Myrtle's looking, said Hermione, nudging Harry and Ron painfully in the ribs. Oh, yeah, she did. Don't lie to me, Myrtle gasped, tears now flooding down her face, while Peeves chuckled happily over her shoulder. You think I don't know what people call me behind my back? Fat Myrtle, ugly Myrtle, miserable, moaning, moping Myrtle. You've forgotten Pimply, Peeves hissed in her ear. Moaning Myrtle burst into anguished sobs and fled from the dungeon. Peeves shot after her, pelting her with moldy peanuts, yelling, Pimply, Pimply. Oh dear, said Hermione sadly. Nearly headless Nick now drifted toward them through the crowd. Enjoying yourselves? Oh yes, they lied. Not a bad turnout, said Nearly Headless Nick proudly. The wailing widow came all the way up from Kent. It's nearly time for my speech. I'd better go and warn the orchestra. The orchestra, however, stopped playing at that very moment. They and everyone else in the dungeon fell silent, looking around in excitement as the hunting horn sounded. Oh, here we go, said Nearly Headless Nick bitterly. Through the dungeon wall burst a dozen ghost horses, each ridden by a headless horseman. The assembly clapped wildly and started to clap too, but stopped quickly at the sight of Nick's face. The horses galloped into the middle of the dance floor and halted, rearing and plunging. At the front of the pack was a large ghost who held his bearded head under his arm, from which position he was blowing the horn. The ghost leapt down, lifted his head high in the air so he could see over the crowd, and everyone laughed, and strode over to Nearly Headless Nick, squashing his head back onto his neck. Nick, he roared, how are you? Head still hanging in there? He gave a hearty guffaw and clapped Nearly Headless Nick on the shoulder. Welcome, Patrick, said Nick stiffly. Livens, said Patrick, spotting Harry, Ron, and Hermione, and giving a huge fake jump of astonishment so that his head fell off again. The crowd howled with laughter. Very amusing, said Nearly Headless Nick darkly. Don't mind, Nick, shouted Sir Patrick's head from the floor. Still upset, we won't let him join the hunt. But I mean to say, look at the fellow. I think, Harry said hurriedly, at a meaningful look from Nick. Nick's very frightening and... Ha, yelled Sir Patrick's head. Betty asked you to say that. If I could have everyone's attention, it's time for my speech, said Nearly Headless Nick loudly, striding toward the podium and climbing into an icy blue spotlight. My late lamented lords, ladies, and gentlemen, it is my great sorrow. But no one heard much more. Sir Patrick and the rest of the Headless Hunt had just started a game of head hockey, and the crowd was turning to watch. Nearly Headless Nick tried vainly to recapture his audience, but gave up as Sir Patrick's head went sailing past him to loud cheers. Harry was very cold by now, not to mention hungry. I can't stand much more of this, Ron muttered, his teeth chattering, as the orchestra ground back into action, and the ghosts swept back onto the dance floor. Let's go, Harry agreed. They backed toward the door, nodding and beaming at anyone who looked at them, and a minute later were hurrying back up the passageway, full of black candles. Pudding might not be finished yet, said Ron hopefully, leading the way toward the steps to the entrance hall. And then Harry heard it. Rip, tear, kill. It was the same voice, the same cold, murderous voice he had heard in Lockhart's office. He stumbled to a halt, clutching at the stone wall, listening with all his might, looking around, squinting up and down at the dimly lit passageway. Harry, what are you... It's that voice again. Shut up for a minute. So hungry for so long. Listen, Harry said urgently, and Ron and Hermione froze, watching him. Kill, time to kill. The voice was growing fainter. Harry was sure it was moving away, moving upward. A mixture of fear and excitement gripped him as he stared at the dark ceiling. How could it be moving upward? Was it a phantom to whom stone ceilings didn't matter? This way, he shouted and began to run up the stairs into the entrance hall. It was no good hoping to hear anything here. The babble of talk from the Halloween feast was echoing out of the great hall. Harry sprinted up the marble staircase to the first floor, with Ron and Hermione clattering behind him. Harry, what are we... Shh! Harry strained his ears. Distantly from the floor above, and growing fainter still, he heard the voice. I smell blood. I smell blood. His stomach lurched. It's going to kill someone, he shouted, and ignoring Ron and Hermione's bewildered faces, he ran up the next flight of stairs three at a time, trying to listen over his own pounding footsteps. Harry hurtled around the whole of the second floor, Ron and Hermione panting behind him, not stopping until they turned a corner to the last deserted passage. Harry, what was that all about? Said Ron, wiping the sweat off his face. I couldn't hear anything. But Hermione gave a sudden gasp, pointing down the corridor. Look! Something was shining on the wall ahead. They approached slowly, squinting through the darkness. Foot-high words had been daubed on the wall between the two windows, shimmering in the light cast by the flaming torches. The Chamber of Secrets has been opened. Enemies of the air, beware. What's that thing hanging underneath? Said Ron, in a slight quiver in his voice. As they edged nearer, Harry almost slipped. There was a puddle of water on the floor. Ron and Hermione grabbed him, and they inched toward the message, eyes fixed on the dark shadow beneath it. All three of them realized what it was at once and leapt backwards with a splash. Mrs. Norris, the caretaker's cat, was hanging by her tail from the torch bracket. She was stiff as a board, her eyes wide and staring. For a few seconds, they didn't move. Then Ron said, let's get out of here. Shouldn't we try and help? Harry began awkwardly. Trust me, said Ron. We don't want to be found here. But it was too late. A rumble, as though of distant thunder, told them the feast had just ended. From either end of the corridor where they stood came the sound of hundreds of feet climbing the stairs with the loud, happy talk of well-fed people. The next moment, students were crashing into the passage from both ends. The chatter, the bustle, the noise died suddenly as the people in front spotted the hanging cat. Harry, Ron, and Hermione stood alone in the middle of the corridor as silence fell among the mass of students pressing forward to see the grisly sight. Then someone shouted through the quiet, "Enemies of the air, beware. You'll be next, mudbloods." It was Draco Malfoy. He had pushed to the front of the crowd, his cold eyes alive, his usually bloodless face flushed as he grinned at the sight of the hanging, immobile cat. And that's the end of Chapter 8. Chapter 9 is called The Writing on the Wall. And I hope you like that, my beautiful kitten Boo. And I'm sure you're already asleep by now. Now it's time for the pup to go to sleep, too. I love you so much, beautiful. Good night.